Bluebird in the sky, tell me what went wrong. Did your wings turn back on you? You rode through open skies, intent on getting home, but now you find that skies aren't so blue. Oh.
Hi, welcome to Bad Childhood, a mental health podcast. Many bad childhoods are filled with quirky and weird situations, mysteries, lies, false identities, and in my case, maybe even spies. I'm your host, Natalie Hartney. I'm a bad childhood survivor and thriver, and a licensed professional counselor in private practice. My stories are hardly exclusive to me, and I hope that by talking about my bad childhood, I make it easier for others to talk about theirs. All the bizarre twists and turns that led me to the therapist chair make for an exciting and fruitful journey. And with each episode, I will share therapeutic lessons and insights, usually reserved for the session space. And while I am a therapist, this is a no-guru zone, no yoga mats or health food required. A new episode will drop every other Wednesday and is available through Amazon and Spotify, and can be found in any app that offers podcasts. So, let's get to it, shall we?
The sun is gray and gone, but you will carry on. Remember when skies were so blue.
Oh. Thanks for joining me in the pod. Welcome to episode one of Bad Childhood. So let's talk about talking about bad childhoods. Have you ever started to share childhood stories and the person you're talking to, like their whole demeanor changes and they start sort of slowly shaking their head and you can see they look to be on the verge of tears and they just look at you like you're the most pitiful person they've ever met and now they just feel bad? Or you find yourself suddenly in competition with somebody for like who had the shittiest home life. Like, you're just trying to tell a story or share something and suddenly it's like a pissing contest. You know, another thing that happens are the listener just sort of abandons ship by talking over you or will literally turn and just like start talking to another person. Like they just completely disengage. You know, these things can happen when we start telling our stories, right? Because our stories impact other people. They're not just sort of benign. Our stories have power. Sometimes I'll start to tell a story to somebody and like literally midway through, I'm like, oh shit, I can't tell this story. So I have to do like a quick edit and attach a fake ending to it. Or sometimes my nervous system will prevent me from even trying. So I'll start trying to construct a story that's tellable and figure out if I can. And then I'll just be like, nope, you know, I don't have a story for that. We had neighbors over, I don't know, last month or something. And we were talking about birthday parties and asking if I'd ever had a birthday party, a surprise party in particular. And so I told the story of the one time I had a surprise party. And, you know, I was being shuffled between parents and coming home. And I walked in the door. It was raining. And one of my step siblings was there and said, you know, oh, because it's raining, no one could come to your party. And I was so sad. And I started to cry. And, you know, it's going to be okay. And I was so upset. And they walked me into the dining room and all my friends are like staring at me, bawling my head off. And they're like, surprise. And in my family, that was hilarious. Like, that's a favorite story. And when I told this story, thinking like it would be kind of funny, my neighbors were like, oh my God. And my husband was like, that's the saddest thing. And, you know, if we come from kind of a shitty childhood, we don't really know. So to me, what's a funny story and, you know, one of the more benign things that happened to them was really sad. So for lots of us, talking about our bad childhood gets hard because, like, never mind the emotional stuff, but the narrative, right? The construction of what we want to talk about, the overall story, really can be interrupted by memory gaps. Or, like, a good description I read once was blocks and ruptures. I think that's such a great way to say it. So rather than having what's known in the business as a cohesive narrative, many of our stories are sort of truncated or, like, cut off, or we have, like, one part of the story, but we don't really remember how it started or how it ended. So these blocks and ruptures of memory are really common with kind of how brains store, like, trauma memories, right? Things just get really confused. So for a long time, in my memory, I had a certain friend who was a friend of mine when I was in grammar school in Chicago. So you can imagine my shock when flipping through an online yearbook from grammar school in New Hampshire, that child showed up. I had no recollection of them being a part of any social group with the other people that were from New Hampshire. I had inserted them into my Chicago memories. So another part of maybe just sort of talking about our childhood stuff is that we are confused by it because our memories may be really inaccurate, right? They're like kind of foggy, maybe out of order. We often don't remember the context of things. And so when people want to ask kind of follow-up questions, we got nothing, right? So what are our examples for how we talk about bad childhoods? Well, think about how bad childhoods are represented throughout life. So, like, TV, movies, just in sort of, you know, books, magazines, I don't know, popular culture, I guess. We've got pitiful characters. The lone wolf killer, you know, when they're doing psychological profiling on some of these crime shows, right? The sociopath, the angry character, the bad partner. An exception to this sort of loose rule is what happens in the world of comedy. So how do comedians get away with talking about a bad childhood or kind of their traumatic experiences, right? So a couple of things to keep in mind. Dark humor in stand-up follows creative formulas. There are rules and limits. The other thing is that it's audience tested. So by the time we're seeing someone set on, I don't know, you know, late night TV or whatever, it has gone through several iterations and been edited and memorized, and tempo has been worked out, and all this, you know, all of these sort of performance oriented things have taken place before we hear it. The other thing is that the telling of the story is purpose driven. It is to elicit a laugh. It is to elicit a response. Well, that can be really good because humor has the power to provide psychological distance from the trauma. So if I'm a stand-up comedian, which I assure you I am not, and I am telling a story, I have worked through it enough so that I have psychological distancing from it. But it's also been so curated as to not vicariously traumatize my audience. It has been worked and worked and worked to become acceptable to share. So most of us are not comedians. And if we feel like we can only tell our stories if they are of value, if there's a payoff, someone laughs, or you know, I tell my stories a lot in therapy settings as a way to build common bridges or to help people understand they're not alone or to provide examples and things like that. Again, that's all purpose driven, right? And really, television shows only recently started exploring the narratives and dynamics of characters who have been traumatized, and even less characters who have been traumatized and have healed. Now, I came up in the 70s, and so for a long time in the 80s, let's say, the actor who had had the bad childhood was typically a troubled bit player that would come in, right? The one who introduced the main character to drugs, the one who brought alcohol to the party, the one who was going through a divorce and needed to sleep on a main character's couch, right? So again, purpose-driven to move plot line, elicit a specific emotion for character or story development. That works when we have writers and we do table reads and I'm going to use this word again, when we curate stories. In the real world, for those of us who have had bad childhoods, we often feel like we cannot share our stories because they do not go through that process. And hard as we might try, oftentimes we'll decide, you know, I don't really know how the story ends, so I can't tell it. So we are left carrying stories where the character is caught mid-action and unable to complete the action. If I tell a story about being scared and hiding under my bed and somebody says, and then what happened? If I'm telling the truth, I'm going to be like, I have no idea. I suppose I came out from under the bed because, you know, graduated high school. But we don't have, oftentimes, we don't have fully developed stories that we can tell. And when we see fully developed curated stories, we think, well, I can't do that because I don't have a full story. One of the most freeing things I ever read was in a writing class, and it was about writing memoirs. And what I loved about this class was it was the first time I was given permission to finish a story the way I wanted, with it not needing to be objectively accurate. To have this idea that I could tell a story and release sort of a bit of my pent-up truth, and it not having to be dissected as though it were evidence in a criminal case, where it could just be told and I could attach a true enough ending to it. That can be a powerful piece for you to keep in mind as you're thinking about your own bad childhood and your stories and how you can begin to possibly talk about them. And we'll, you know, as we go through this, we'll talk about the importance of being able to do that.
We're going on the wrong way, growing strong and on and on.
So let me tell you a bit about me. I'm from that family, you know, that family who lives in that house over there. So imagine I came up in the 70s. Polyester, so much polyester. Shiny, textured, itchy. Oh my goodness. There's a picture of my mother's husband, and he's wearing plaid pants, a white patent leather belt, white patent leather shoes, and a plaid jacket. Yeah. I'm pretty sure he had a satin shirt on with that, although I guess it would have been polyester. So that was the style of the day. I'm gonna start with, you know, I'm in like first grade. And I'm going to tell you that my bad childhood contains all the bad stuff. So take this as a trigger warning if you have particular sensitivities of any topic that has to do with childhood trauma, it's going to come up. So we moved about every year. If not because the family moved, then because I was moved between family members. Each school change deposited me into like brand new ecosystems. So I would have like brief lifetimes in secure settings. But, you know, another piece on the game board of life would move and there would, you know, it would require my moving. So that sort of secure setting would be quickly replaced with, you know, another setting where I'm an outcast. And that, you know, that move happens again. I'm a loner. It happens again. I become a rebel. And ultimately what I consider to be for myself, like an enemy of the people. I became like a one girl wrecking crew. And this might sound really familiar because all the pain and disconnect becomes internalized. And then all that pain and internalized disconnect became the big me. It was my identity. So I kind of think of this as internalized shame, like weaponized, right? Another way to think about this is to realize that in order to kind of fit in with all the crap of a bad childhood, those of us who grew up in bad childhoods or through bad childhoods, we had to adapt, right? So then we're kind of barfed out into the world with no skills and a really damaged view of what the world is. So we surround ourselves with people and situations that kind of allow us to stay like the fucked up kid we were in our family of origin. If we're lucky, really, really lucky, maybe something happens and we're taught that the world of our like effed up families isn't what the rest of the world actually looks like. And maybe even further down the line, we can learn that the world is the world we create. We decide who's in it, what behaviors we will tolerate from ourselves and others. And we hopefully evolve into this sort of new me that we could have been for a longer time of our lives had we been raised right. In other words, with a bit of self-parenting, and this is like a big theme in recovery, but with a bit of self-parenting, we can kind of rewrite the ship, right? We don't have to go through a whole life recreating the world in which we grew up if we had a bad childhood. We can turn it around. So the moves meant several scene changes for me, all those times of moving. And the characters also changed with each new address. So there were different caregivers. There were foster kids, stepkids, girlfriends, boyfriends, pets, parent sets. Never mind like teachers, peers, neighbors. So it's a lot of chaos when you start thinking about, you know, one little kid. Kind of, you know, how do the kids at school dress? How do I find the classrooms? Do the teachers like me? And, you know, as we talk more, you will find that if you had feelings of teachers disliking you, you were likely right. You were likely right on the money. Because there are some teachers that when they meet kids like us, recognize themselves and do not like it. And feel shame. And we are a mirror to them. And that can make for really dicey dynamics in classrooms. And I will have stories about that. One thing that was pretty consistent, regardless of household, was alcohol. One household in particular, I had very violent alcoholic parents. My mom's social life was really crippled by histrionics and attachment issues. And that really means that she was a highly sexualized person and would feel abandonment Well, let me say it this way, would set herself up for abandonment over and over and over again. And I was typically kind of at her knee going through these multitudes of relationships. There was a lot of sexual inappropriateness. So again, with the trigger warnings, I'm the product of a swinging 60s party and partner swap. So it was the worst kept secret ever is that I was not my dad's daughter. And I like to say, like, I was never his daughter. Like, it was always clear that I was part and parcel with my mom. The parties continued, and there were just no sexual boundaries in our house. I will offer more trigger warnings as we get into those episodes. I think this is important to talk about on this podcast because many times people will lead you to the topic and then leave you standing there by yourself wondering if your story is like anyone else's. So with trigger warnings, we're going to go there. If there's work that you need to do to kind of get ready for that, I encourage you to do it. I encourage you to do it because we get to talk about our bad childhoods. And containing them or feeling like we can't, it just creates poison in our bodies. So making friends was a non-starter. I was weird. I was such a weird kid. And what I now understand was a great act of wisdom. School friends were prohibited from coming to our house. So I might, you know, make friends, but it quickly became clear that they were not going to be coming over to our house, which now, again, as an adult looking back, I think, good parenting. So there was social services involvement. There were, you know, courts were involved. I have a brief memory of a foster care stint that I'll talk about. And then the spy. Let's talk about the potential spy in our midst. So my mother married a man who introduced himself in three parts. And this was any time on the phone making a reservation. You know, we didn't have the internet back then, so it was mostly phone calls if you were setting something up. So anytime he had to leave his name, it went like this. Dallas as in Texas, Campbell as in soup, and Crutcher as in broken leg. And he was one mysterious dude, man. Though we didn't really know that until his stories started to unravel.
We're gonna go riding right to the sunset. We're gonna go flying right through the sky. Won't take a look back. Won't see the sunrise.
Hey, Peas in My Pod. Welcome to my favorite part of the podcast. This is the part where I share with you things therapists know. And the first topic we're going to tackle is low self-esteem. And that's because if you were here in the pod with me, you were likely impacted by some bad childhood stuff. And it is really natural to have low self-esteem. So instead of thinking of any low self-esteem issues you have as sort of shameful or weakness or any of the other crap we tell ourselves, I want you to consider that your low self-esteem is just a natural outcome of adverse life experiences. If you sprained your ankle, you're going to have a swollen ankle. If you had a bad childhood, you're going to have low self-esteem. Now, you might cover it up with all kinds of things, right? Perfectionism comes to mind. You know, overachievement in certain areas comes to mind, things like that. I work with a ton of people who are super, super successful, top of their fields, top of their games, low self-esteem. And it will always find a way to sort of seep into your life, right? So we want to be able to attend to our low self-esteem and learn about it. And that's easier to do if we are not ashamed of it. So low self-esteem, natural outcome of adverse life experiences, and nothing to be ashamed of, okay? Sometimes we'll get ourselves into relationships where people will weaponize our low self-esteem. Keep that in mind as you're thinking about your own low self-esteem. That has it been weaponized against you? And is that why it's hard for you to think about it in terms of natural outcome versus personality deficit? Okay. So our esteem's formed when we see ourselves reflected in the responses of people around us. If you are a kid and you get up and you stumble and somebody comes over and helps you up and says, you know, that was really cool that you tried that. It's okay that you stumbled. You know, come on, let's, you know, try it again. That's going to have a different outcome than if you're the kid who gets up and stumbles and you look around to see and nobody even noticed, so you just stay on the floor. Or you're mocked. Or you're told, see, I told you you couldn't do it, so just come back over here. Low self-esteem is a natural outcome. Okay. And if there's a ghost of belief that we deserved to be treated badly, and there always will be, we will believe ourselves to be fundamentally unworthy in a really deep way. This is where perfectionism is born, and that sort of overachievement thing, right? That's where it's born. And so low self-esteem demands all kinds of unhelpful behaviors to help us feel safe. We'll start things and not finish them. We will decide to not even start things. We will take ourselves out of the running before we even look objectively at the thing we're thinking of doing. Okay? All that's low self-esteem. So during my years, during the years where my ideas of self would have been naturally formed, I was busy trying to survive psychologically intact, and I would guess that's true for you too. I mean, I didn't know it then, but now I understand that the way I was reflected back to myself through the people around me wasn't great. I was a bother, a nuisance. God, I was expensive, right? If I ever needed something, there was going to be a problem. And so, yes, this has impact on us. To think that a kid with a bad childhood would come out of it unscathed is absurd. But that was the expectation for a lot of us for a long time. And this is the mentality, and I heard it a lot growing up. Oh my God, all that happened so long ago. Why don't you just forget about it? Just remember the good times. Right? Has someone ever said that to you? Or another version of that is, it all happened so long ago, it doesn't bother me. I got over that a long time ago, right? It's all worked out now. But this is what therapists know, is that it eats us from the inside out. It destroys us from the inside when we try to hold on to this stuff and act like none of it ever happened. So I want you to keep an eye out for your own negative feelings about yourself, which leads us to, drum roll please, the activity for this week, or I guess for the next 2 weeks. I'm going to drop another episode, not next week, but the week after. So you have some time. So here's the activity. We all have inner voices. Do you know how to hear yours? Because it's always yapping at you. It's telling you all kinds of shit about yourself. For kids like me who had a bad childhood, our inner voice can be particularly critical. And it's so constant we don't even realize we have it. So it might bubble up once in a while if you're like, oh God, I'm an idiot. Right? Even things as simple as that. So I want you to find your inner voice. Sit quietly and see what thoughts pop up. I asked my best friend a while ago, I said, when you just sit quietly, what kind of thoughts come up? And she looked at me like I was from another planet. And she goes, oh, I don't sit quietly. She's like, I don't want to know those thoughts. So that's classic avoidance, right? So this is what I want to invite you to do. If you can, if it's tolerable, just sit quietly and see what thoughts pop up. And then I want you to write them down. And it's not going to be good enough to just be like, I'll remember these. Oh yeah, I'm hearing them. No, I want you to write them down, okay? And do this a few times a week over the next couple weeks. Then I want you to review the list of shit you say to yourself. And then check in with how it feels. How does it feel? Is it positive, affirming, and nurturing? Probably not. Is it cruel, dismissive, and minimizing? Much more likely. Unless you've gone through a lot of therapy, it is much more likely that your inner voice is just continuing the abuse patterns of your bad childhood. Okay. So now the next step, should you choose to accept the assignment, is I want you to write a letter as though you're writing it to your favorite person in the whole wide world. It's important to write it down, otherwise the lesson is lost. Include all the thoughts you wrote down, but direct them to the person you're writing to. Yeah, ask yourself, how'd that feel? If it felt pretty shitty, you've discovered your inner critic. And don't worry about it. We're going to keep working with this inner critic. We're going to help you to understand who's driving your feel-bad bus. We're going to work on some different strategies to quiet that inner critical voice. And let's say turn up the volume on your more nurturing, self-compassionate voice. All right, that's what I have for today's episode. Again, you can find this podcast on Spotify, Amazon, any place where you would normally find podcasts. There is no charge to listen to the podcast, and I will be dropping new episodes every other Wednesday morning. And I hope you'll tune in. Oh my God, I am so old. I hope you'll recommend us to a friend or friends or folks you think could benefit. All right, guys. Later.